Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. In 1991, a book was published that dared to challenge the idea that the mystery of the origins of life had been solved. In short, it put Darwin on trial. It was a modern-day version of the Scopes trial, only this time it was Darwinian theory that was being dismantled. Its author, a Harvard-educated, University of California at Berkeley lawyer, Philip E. Johnson, awakened a movement of scientists, philosophers, and mathematicians who dared to step forward and attest to seeing evidence of intelligent design in nature. For the 20th anniversary of this groundbreaking work, the Discovery Institute held a celebration, both for the work and its author. In the following podcast, we'll hear from the author, journalist, and executive editor of Touchstone, a journal of mere Christianity, James M. Kushner. Mr. Kushner describes the gift that is Darwin on trial.
I am actually not your typical tribute speaker on this topic because I'm not a scientist, I'm not an academician, I'm not a scholar. I'm simply a layman and a journalist. I'm a Christian, and I've been very devoutly interested in the questions of origins in science and metaphysics for a long time. I see the session is titled The Book That Changed the World. My, that's an ambitious title for what many people said at the time was a foolishly ambitious book. But the author, a certain Philip E. Johnson, was tenured on a campus known for having a very radical faculty and was even more dangerous than most of his fellow faculty members, a man genuinely subversive of the First Order. Now, subversives had already undermined two towering figures of modernity, Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud. But that wasn't enough for Phil Johnson. He dared to take mean aim on enlightened scientific theory of the origin of Phil Johnson. That is, the idea that Phil Johnson himself was the product of natural selection and blind evolutionary forces, a survivor of the fittest. Johnson, in hyper-survival mode, decided to put Charles Darwin on trial. Cheeky Professor Johnson, puffed up by a desire to be a big prosecutor or state's attorney, not even licensed to practice law in England, the American Johnson went after a citizen of the British Commonwealth. In the media circus known as book publishing, in exhuming the long-dead Mr. Darwin in his groundbreaking 1991 book, Darwin on Trial, Professor Johnson did serious damage to his reputation. Johnson's reputation at Berkeley, that is, as well as Mr. Darwin's. Yet, unlike Freud or Marx, Darwin still lingers on, despite Johnson's well-aimed shot, and more troops joined in the fray, but like an English Rasputin, Darwin lived on. Now, Darwin's lingering is not unlike that one of Karl Marx's disciples, Vladimir Lenin. Now, it's true that Lenin's ideas inherited from Marx have not really lingered on, except at Berkeley. But Lenin is alive and well, in a manner of speaking, that is, he is one of the unburied dead kept above ground since his death in 1924 to make sure that the comrades know that he is the one responsible for the Great Revolution and he will be with us until the end of time. Lenin's name lingers like a red ghost over the Russian people in Red Square, his body kept intact after a fashion by something we could only call weird science. The family of Lenin's embalmers states that the corpse is real and requires daily maintenance, including occasional chemical baths with special secret formulas. We do have to keep up appearances. Well, hey, it's science and they're scientists, but do not try this at home. Darwin is, in a sense, the Lenin of biology. He launched a regime which grows atheism and materialism and also the end of religion as having any truth content. But Darwin's name, and not really his outdated science, is kept alive by the continuous work of scientists publishing papers, embedding Darwin's name in a bath of scientific data about biological systems, so that his name, or the idea, his idea of evolution, is preserved by chemicals and coded messages in phrases such as the evolutionarily honed mating habits of the spider monkey, or Lady Gaga's appeal to young men groomed through millennia of evolution-driven mating for survival. Darwin will survive in name as long as the Mandarins speak Darwinese, as long as that remains fashionable. Well, enough about Darwin. See how he dominates everything? Even my paper. I only had one reference, but it kept breeding more references when I wasn't looking. I had not met the godfather of intelligent design, Professor Johnson, until 2001. To be honest, I thought I was going to meet one very clever, smooth operator when he agreed to allow me to interview him at Yale University over breakfast. Eggs, sausage, toast, coffee, and more coffee passed my lips for well over an hour, while one of the kindest professors with a good-selling book answered all my questions about why he did what he did. It was the best breakfast I ever had, even without the food. What has repeatedly struck me over the years about Phil's campaign against Darwinism is that it's not personal. It's really not, first of all, about Charles Darwin, to be sure, but it's most certainly not at all about Phil Johnson. Phil's been doing a great service, a ministry, reaching out to engage other young thinkers with a willingness to see them carry the torch using their own talents and gifts. His self-giving strikes me as just the sort of thing a true Darwinist hates. There is no selfish gene here. How in the world did Johnson survive? Phil is not making disciples or replicants, but he's firing the mind and imagination of others, and free of charge, with the light of honest inquiry and humane skepticism about the certainties of the modern Enlightenment project. Phil's skepticism, on the other hand, is born of a humility about man's ability to grasp all of ultimate truth through reason and science alone. Richard Weaver, the author of Ideas Have Consequences, pointed out around the time of the Darwinian centennial in 1959 that was celebrated with great display in Chicago. Richard Weaver pointed out that laymen can judge these things about evolution because we have access through our rational faculties to the rules of evidence, even when technical issues are involved. Phil showed us how that works with evolution. We could regret that Phil could not be greeted today by the many, many unknown readers who have been influenced, encouraged, illumined, and dare I say, saved by his labors, putting Darwin on trial. The seed has been sowed widely, and the fields continue to ripen in ways that we can't even see. Phil, you have helped neutralize the acid of Darwinism that has devoured the sight of so many who have lost the ability to see the beauty in creation. Had Darwin been a dragon, Phil would be a new St. George, I dare say. The mind that accepts life as a gift, fundamentally as a gift, has been preserved in a most fundamental way by this book, by the Assault on Darwin. A view of the world as gift, life as gift, world and life, given from a giver, always remain as the default position of the religious believer. Another word for this default is dogma. It is the dogma around which every other fact about life may respectfully orbit. It is more than dogma. It confirms life is beautiful more than in a trivial sense. And Phil, you saved beauty and killed the beast. Phil has helped many preserve the radical, life-changing sentiment and idea that life is a gift and not an accident. For that reason, I can say with all confidence that your life, Phil, is a gift from God and a gift to us. Your book helped change the look of the world in the eyes of many, and in many cases helped keep it preserved as a thing of beauty. You have spent your talent well, radical that you are. Thank you, and may God bless you.
As a part of the celebration of Darwin on Trial and its tremendous impact on the intelligent design movement, we hope you will explore darwinontrial.com. This has been a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, copyright 2011 Discovery Institute. For more information, please visit discovery.org/CSC.